Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Beyond Sleep Training Podcast, a podcast dedicated to sharing real tales of how people have managed sleep in their family outside of sleep training culture. Because sleep looks different with a baby in the house. And because every family is different, there is no one-size-fits-all approach to take. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is being recorded, the Kalkadoon people. I pay my respects to the elders of this nation and the many other nations our guests reside in from the past, present and emerging. We honour Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and the unique cultural and spiritual relationships to the land, water and seas, as well as their rich contributions to society, including the birthing and nurturing of children. Welcome back to the Beyond Sleep Training Podcast. I'm your host, Carly Grubb, and with me today is one of our wonderful volunteers, Donna Smith, and she's coming to us all the way from New Zealand. So welcome to the show, Donna.
Kia ora. Thank you very much for having me, Carly. It's good to be here.
And so how long have you been volunteering for us now, Donna?
I joined up as part of the group when my first boy was about 3 months, so 2016, and then started volunteering, I think, probably about 6 months or so after that.
Now, so you must be around from the very, very early start, because we only launched in early 2017, so it must have been like right in the early days. One of our founding people, Donna. I love it.
Yeah, I don't know about how much help I've actually been in as volunteering, but I think it's an awesome support and a great place to actually advocate for our little people. So yeah,
I love it. Thank you so much for your work, and thank you to all of our volunteers, because it really is the only reason that we're able to offer that free peer support. If listeners aren't already a member of our group, be sure to come along and join us on Facebook. We love to have families there so that we can help you right along your journey through Beyond Sleep Training. So thanks for joining us, Donna. Now, to begin the episode, would love to hear who's in your little crew. And how did you think you were going to handle sleep before you had your first baby?
So my little crew has expanded recently. It started off with me and my husband, Brett. We've got Jack, who's our five-year-old boy, who's started school and just started sleeping in his own room. And then we have Bennett, who's just turned 15 months.
Lovely. And so before you had Jack, did you have like visions in your head about how you were going to handle sleep in your family?
Yeah, well, babies just go to sleep, yeah. I'm a physio by background, and I used to do home visits, and we had it drummed into us that we had to make sure that the babies had somewhere that they're sleeping safely and in a separate thing, and go through all of that with our families. So it was very much that babies sleep on their own and in their own safe sleep space. So,
and so you'd set yourself up with a bassinet or a cot for babe?
Yeah. So as things with kids, everything all went a little bit different. Jack decided to turn up at 35 weeks when I was in the middle of gyp-stopping our lounge.
Oh, my gosh.
So he had a bit of a stay in the neonatal unit, and then when he came home, we had a bassinet that he was going to sleep in.
And so how did that turn out?
Yeah, it turns out that we have quite wakeful babies. I found sleep with Jack really tricky because he pretty much, as a lot of babies like to do, only wanted to sleep on me. When he was in NICU, he was a dream. You'd go in and he'd follow this nice routine where he'd got into a really nice pattern where you'd go in, you'd change his nappy, you'd give him a feed, you'd put him back down, he'd sleep, and then 3 hours later you'd repeat. And then we got him home and he didn't want to do that. So I found that really hard because I thought I was failing as a mum because I couldn't get him to sleep. And I went to some of the coffee groups and they'd put their baby down and they could walk out and they'd go to sleep. So around that time, I found out about baby wearing, which was a game changer for me. In similar time, it was one of my friends who helped me into baby wearing mentioned about safe co-sleep bed sharing in the Safe Sleep 7 and things. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Thank goodness for friends who pop along at just the right moments in time.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah.
And so you discovered the Safe Sleep 7 and baby wearing. Did they become go-to tools, or were you still finding, like, how were you actually going about getting babe to sleep, and what was your setup at that stage?
Yeah, so that was still quite tricky because I think especially the evidence out there on babies who've been born early in around sleep is still, even now, because my second baby decided to come at 34 weeks, so they're just getting earlier, it's still been a physio trying to look at evidence-based practice and decision-making around there. That was quite a challenge. Baby wearing was amazing because it meant I could put Jack on, I could go for a walk, which was great for me. He'd go to sleep, and I wouldn't be stuck at home trying to get this little guy to go to sleep in his bassinet. And the freedom of being able to go and do things. And I think also because I'd had to leave him in the neonatal unit and go home without him, actually being able to have that extra time and that closeness with him was really important as well.
It's definitely facilitates that extra contact, especially like you said, you had that trickier start with him. So was he still, so by day he'd sleep in the carrier on you. How were you feeding at this time?
He had, because he was little and then got jaundice, he'd been tube fed with Express breast milk while he was in hospital. Then when we came home, actually that was another challenge. He was just really slow. So because he was little, he'd take an hour to an hour and a half to feed. So in the middle of the night, it was like, okay. My husband was really supportive with that. I used to get up and pump and then do my physio exercises, and he'd feed Jack the Express breast milk and then we'd all go back to bed. So that worked.
And as he got bigger, I'm guessing some of the pumping, like, because that's called triple feeding, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, no. I think so.
That's what they call that loop. Sorry. So that was just while he was little, and once he got stronger, that was something you were able to. Yeah, okay. Because that's kind of like a combination of tricky at nighttime then, isn't it? Because you're feeding for hours on end. But he's prem, so you're trying not to have him in, a shared space with you.
Yeah.
That would have been really hard to stay awake. Did you find that you were falling asleep on occasions doing it?
Yeah, and I think that was the thing where we got to, we were like, oh, actually, if we do it and he has the bottle, we all get back to bed and back to sleep a whole lot easier. And it wasn't, he must have been, we'd gone down to visit my in-laws, and so we're in a different environment, and he was unwell. So it was about that stage when I actually started bringing him into bed for day sleeps, and then kind of built up on confidence with that. So that was definitely then, because then at night he could just feed. It didn't matter how long it took.
Well, that's what I was thinking, because it's kind of like an adds and layer, and I'm sure people listening along who've had prems would have had similar experiences, because those tiny babies can take so long, but that kind of adds to the likelihood that you're going to fall asleep unintentionally, maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
So having that clear space around you just in case is a really smart move, even if you're still intending to pop them into their own space afterwards because you have a prem. That's a really important discussion to have. And I think, like you said too, you look for the research, but the research is just, it's actually still a current gap, because it's like a really, it's a tricky area for them to get enough data on to be able to see trends, to be able to understand what's actually going on there. And so they add the extra caution if you do have an early baby around shared sleep. But if you're feeling sleepy at any stage, whether you have a prem or not, you need to make sure that you're on that safe surface for the off chance you do fall asleep. So thanks for chatting about that with us. So with him, as he got older and stronger and you started sharing a bed with him, were you still baby wearing by day, and was he still a wakeful little fellow, or did it kind of ease up at different times for you?
I think I stopped worrying, stopped actually thinking about it, really, which was easier for me rather than trying to follow a routine or a schedule. I'd just get on with what we wanted to do for the day, and if he wanted to sleep, then he went to sleep. If he wanted to be awake, then he was awake. And we were getting more sleep overnight because we were sharing. And then we quite often have a bit of a nice cuddly nap in the afternoon as well. So
beautiful. Yeah. So you kind of worked out your pattern on making sure that you both got the rest that you needed, basically. Because once you're doing that, it does alleviate a lot of that stress and pressure that you feel like you're not in crisis mode anymore, so you can just carry on.
Yeah, and definitely. And I think things I found, we went over to Waiheke Island, which is just out of Auckland, for a day trip. And because Jack would sleep on me, we just jumped on the ferry. I took the buggy to carry all the gear that we needed, wore Jack, and he just went to sleep and woke up. Whereas one of my other friends who's needed to be at home and in the cot to sleep, everything was much more rigid around sleep times and things as well. So that was definitely a bonus of a baby who would sleep anywhere as long as he was on me. So
yeah, absolutely. And it comes along with different personalities too, because I know I've had one baby who just couldn't handle sleeping out and about because of the distractions and FOMO, and he needed the quiet, cool, dark areas to find any kind of rest for that crazy little brain that he has, busy brain, I should say, not crazy. But then I've had two other babies who just snapped wherever, whenever, didn't really seem fazed by the action that was going on around them. So, yes, embracing that personality. And I love that you could see that you had that freedom available, because he was a contact napping baby wearing baby. Very handy.
Yeah, and I think, as he's saying too, it's amazing how different, having my second baby, how different they can be within that as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, we might get on to him, but we'll get, I just want to know, because so there must be about, 3.5 years between your two?
4.5 years.
So with your first guy, how did sleep evolve as he became a toddler into preschool? Or did it have a bit of a steady track to being less needy at night, or how's that going for you?
Yeah, it's been really interesting. I think it's changed, we've been pretty flexible on it. We moved him out of our room when he was He's been in and out. We moved him out and then we moved him back because we missed him. And then he's been pretty keen on being in our bed. Coming in the middle of the night. We've got a massive Super King, which is very nice. But when I was pregnant, we ended up, we put his toddler bed side card onto ours because he was coming in all the time anyway. So at least we had a bit more space, not so much in the bedroom, but in the bed. So he'd been sleeping on his own for about a year then, and then I got pregnant and he wanted to be back in with us. So we had a three-bedroom house with all of us sleeping in one room. And then he's moved out. I went back to work full-time when he was about 2.5, 3. So he was still feeding overnight at that stage. So that was really nice to actually be able to go home and still have that.
Lovely.
Lots of ups and downs. But
it's great to hear a perspective on a night nursing toddler, as well as it still being a great means of reconnection when you've been separated by day through work requirements and whatnot. So it's really nice for people listening along. Once we've had a few people who have breastfed toddlers through to natural weaning ages, and it's great to hear different experiences with that, because so often people are hearing that they need to night wean earlier and earlier. And so it's great to get that perspective for people. So thank you for sharing that part as well.
Both of my boys have been, because I went back to work a bit later with Jack, and I've been back to work just over a year with Ben, and actually been like, hang on, I don't actually need to wean them. Like, that they just seem to manage without me during the day, and when I come home they're like, woohoo.
She's back. I love that, because yes, it used to be, I know when I had my first guy in my original group of mothers, the conversations around return to work were very heavily focused on weaning, because it just seemed like the thing you needed to do so that your kid could go and be put to daytime sleeps and whatnot without you. Whereas we know from the experience of many, many, many working parents in the Beyond Sleep Training Project, including you, that the babies are really adjustable to being able to still nurse when they're back with you and doing something different with other carers, aren't they?
Yeah, no, I just talked to my husband, and apparently Ben slept for about 3 hours at care today, so we might have a busy night, but yeah.
Yes, he sounds like he's going to be a bit of a night owl tonight, going by that record, but nice one. So we probably should get on to Ben. Tell us about having Ben. How did that things look when he came along?
We'd had Amdenard, partly there's a big gap, I think, because we took a while kind of thinking about whether we wanted to have another child or not. And Ben's just been amazing. Like, he's been such a blessing. His name actually means little blessed one, and I'm like, that works well for him. He surprised us by deciding to be an unplanned home birth at 34 weeks. That was fun.
That would be a nice little shock.
Yep.
What were you doing at home this time, Donna? Were you doing home repairs again?
I wasn't doing jibbing. Well, to be fair, actually, we had found out we'd bought a property and we'd like, right, we're not doing any renos, we're having another baby. And then we found that the bathroom was all rotten. So we were actually in the middle of that. It's Braxton Hicks, run a bath and sit in the bath, and we currently didn't have a bath at that stage. So it wasn't Braxton Hicks. So my husband got to deliver Ben at home, outside Jack's bedroom with Jack watching. So that was not exactly how we thought it would go.
Wow, and so how was Ben, because that's pretty early. How were both of you?
Yeah, well, I was a bit concerned because Jack had had difficulty breathing when he was born and ended up needing ventilated and having surfactant. Ben was actually fine. I had, I can't remember the technical term now, they were a bit concerned about my cord. So we talked about having to have active delivery of the placenta, which obviously we weren't really in the right place. He popped out and he was okay. So we just hung there and waited for my midwife. Actually got there before the ambulance. And luckily we had have you got anything we can put the placenta in? And because we'd renovating, we had a big massive dustpan. That was used for catching the placenta.
That is awesome. I love a good birth story, and sudden home birth or accidental home birth ones are even better, I think. That's impressive. Very well done, you. And I'm so glad Ben was okay. So did you have to spend any time being monitored in hospital, or was he straight home with you?
Yeah, no. So that was so he got born at home, and then we're back in hospital for about 3 weeks, giving them a bit of time to wake up a bit, and he got jaundice as well, and then feed a bit, so I was a bit worried about Jack, but we went through and did some, we made a card for our midwife to say thank you, and we did a picture, and Jack talked me through the story of what happened. So we've got the house, and then there's blood and the ambulance coming, and us waking, because we had got Jack up because we were going to drive to the hospital.
Wow, and bit of play therapy going on there, so yeah. Draw it out for you. Oh, little guy. It'd be interesting to talk to him as he gets a bit older to see what recollections have stuck for him, if there's any parts that stand out still for his little memory. I love
definitely.
Very interesting. So when Ben did actually get to come home, how did things go? Like, were you planning to do things any differently, or what was the go?
I was planning on going to term.
Well, there's that, but, yeah. You know, plans.
It was tricky, because when Jack had been in hospital, that was my job, because he was we were quite close to the hospital in Auckland, so I used to get up in the morning, have a shower, walk to the hospital, spend all day with him, and then come home, and then quite often go in for a night feed as well. And with Ben, it was tricky because we had Jack to try and spend some time with as well. In this setup we're in Dunedin, which is amazing, but they didn't have any space on the neonatal unit, so I was upstairs anyway. So I decided to go home after a night, because I'm like, well, at least if I'm at home, I can spend some time with Brett and Jack, and then come in and spend time with Ben. So Ben would have got less of me, just because I was trying to spend some time with the other boys as well. So yeah.
It makes it really tricky. It's not like you can split yourself in too many places, so it's making the best of the time that you had together. So when you were in with him, were you able to have lots of skin on skin and things like that?
Yeah, I had him out like the next day, and then in with my carriers, and and actually being in second time, NICU mum, definitely felt a bit more comfortable in terms of advocating and encouraging some of that stuff. So yeah,
beautiful. That would have felt like, I'm sure you don't want to find yourself in that position again, but at least, like you say, you would have had some learnings from that first round to be able to take forward with you this time. So once you did get home, how did you handle sleep with the two of them, because you said that Jack was in the sidecar bed at the time? What did you do with the newborn as well?
It was in the bassinet on the other side. So, yeah, our bed just got wider. So Ben was in a bassinet, and so initially I was getting up and I'd go down to the lounge and watch some quality TV and feed him, and then go back and resettle him. And that worked quite well to begin with. And then he got to the point where he just wasn't resettling. And I think you start having all the memories of the stress of not being able to get your little E to sleep. So it was about that stage where where I switched into having him in bed with us instead. So
And did that help? Was he a bit more settled once he was in bed with you?
Yeah, and I think even for my mindset over the fact that I was starting to dread nights again and dread the fact that I'd have to try and resettle him and he wouldn't be able to settle him and then I'd be tired and I wouldn't be able to settle him and he'd wake up or you'd just put him down and then he'd wake up. And so, yeah, for me it was just like, right, well, if he's in with us, then we all get more sleep. So
and you could stop that spiral, especially when you've got to get up the next day and also deal with a toddler.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
It's a different ball game, isn't it, having the toddler with the second baby?
Definitely. And I think that's the thing, you're like that whole, you've still got to get to kindy drop-offs at some point and like get back and pick them up and things as well. So your day goes like is really, really short as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like a blessing in some ways that you get some brief windows where it's just baby and you, but it's also complicated trying to manage all of the logistics of getting kids ready, getting them in the car or whatever transport you're using.
Oh, and I couldn't how long it takes to get two littlies out of the car, out of the house. My husband's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, it's like...
My husband used to say that and be like, guaranteed someone's going to poo as we're about to exit the door. Guaranteed. Yeah. Like there's like, it's just like, you can't. Like, and just if you ever think you are all organized, I remember one trip I was taking all three of mine out for the first time on my own. And like, I'd got everybody out the door. All was going really well. We were going to the library because I had a story time session at library. And we just got there and I'm thinking, yes, you finally did it. You're finally at the point where this is going to be okay for getting everyone going. Picked up the baby, covered in poo, up the entire car seat. And so we clipped her back in and drove back home again, didn't we? Because that was not a wipe job. Like that was a full blown in the bath, car seat in the washing machine. Like it was bad, but it was just that, when you do actually manage to do it, superhero power, I reckon. So you were getting it. So he was in bed with you at nighttime. You went to that fairly quickly out of the newborn stage. Did that continue to be your nighttime strategy with Ben, or has he been in and out as well?
No, well, I was like, right, got it sorted this time. We'll like sidecar the cot. And like I'll go to sleep and then roll off and he can sleep in there. But he's got other ideas about that. So he'll like come and find me. that's still the current plan.
Well, he's 15 months, so they still stay very, very needy in the night. I found that 12 to at least 18 months, if not, I think there's something around 20, 21 months as well for my children. I don't know about yours. But, that second year, it's easier just to roll with them, I've found. Like it's an intense time during the day. So night times I used to just feed and get on with it. Like as long as I could sleep, I was happy.
Yeah.
Very good. And so during the day, just really, I'm looking at the time. Holy dooly, we smashed that half hour. But quickly tell me, during the day, how are you handling sleep with Ben and a toddler? What were you doing?
Baby wearing, again, amazing. Jack doesn't have a sleep anymore because he decided he doesn't want one. So probably too much TV. If we go to have a nap, sometimes Jack could go and watch some TV. My husband pulled out fairly early on that if he came into the room when we were sleeping, he had to have a sleep. So that worked quite well. Definitely if I was doing kindy drop-offs or anything or pickups, Ben would just go on the carrier and he'd have a sleep on me.
It's quite the tool. And also I will say that TV featured in my house too with that second. We always had a rest time at lunchtime and I had friends who'd set up quiet activities and stuff, but my toddlers did not do quiet activities on their own. They just didn't. And so watching a show was what they would do. And so we took that option so that I knew that I could get some time where I'd at least be able to rest either with the baby or have my feet up And everybody had some peace in our house for at least half an hour every day. So I don't, if anyone listening along, never feel bad about working out what actually gives you a break in the day and taking it. That's something that I think everyone who's survived more than one kid has needed on many occasions. So yeah, keep that as an option for you. Now, because of the time, we're going to have to finish up, but I'm wondering, do you have a tip you'd love to share with our listeners that you wish you'd known when you were back at the thick of it all with that first baby?
I think probably it's just actually comes down to that whole actually just trusting yourself, that finding what works for you and what works for your little E, that like we're saying, they're so different. So we've tried to be like Jack led and Ben led and gone with what works with them in terms of meeting their needs. So yeah,
I think it's got to be the sagest advice out there, because no other advice is ever really going to work for every single family, because there's no cookie cutter baby. So being able to tune into that, into yourself and into your kids, it's always going to be your best bet. So thank you for sharing that, Donna, and I'm sure plenty of people listening needed to hear that today. So thank you again for coming on the show with us today. I'll be dropping some information into notes about safe baby wearing practices as well, the ticks information. If you haven't already invested in a good carrier or wrap and you've got a little snuggle bunny on your hands, then I can highly recommend baby wearing as a tool. Like Donna has found, I also found it completely vital. And if you're expecting a second or third or however many babies, a great time now to also pick it up. And there's usually baby wearing meets and sling meets in many local areas, though COVID has really made that challenging.
Yeah, we're trying to. I'm volunteering for the one down in Dunedin here, and quite a few places have switched to either outside or online baby wearing meets. I kind of went down the baby wearing rabbit hole and may have ended up training as a baby wearing consultant as well. So,
Go. I love that, because it's a tool and it's a skill, but like once you've figured out what carrier works for you and what baby's comfy in, it can be an absolute game changer. Although I will say that's something that people don't necessarily realize. They'll think that baby doesn't like baby wearing, but it could actually be that they were uncomfortable in the type of carrier that you had. So that's why baby wearing libraries and meets are great, because they have like a range of different carriers and you can try them out and see how to get you and baby comfy as well. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Donna, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. If you see Donna in the group, make sure that you are very friendly and say thank you, thank you, thank you, because we love our volunteers so very, very much. Thanks so much, Donna.
Cool. Thank you very much for having me, Carly, and thank you for all the amazing work you guys do as well.
Thanks. I really hope you enjoyed the podcast today. The information we discussed was just that, information only. It is not specific advice. If you take any action following something you've heard from our show today, it is important to make sure you get professional advice about your unique situation before you proceed, whether that advice be legal, financial, accounting, medical, or any other advice. Please reach out to me if you do have any questions or if there's a topic you'd really like us to be covering. And if you know somebody who'd really benefit from listening to our podcast, please be sure to pass our name along. Also, check out our free peer support group, the Beyond Sleep Training Project, and our wonderful website, www.littlesparklers.org. If you'd like even more from the show, you can join us as a patron on Patreon, and you can find a link for that in our show notes. If listening is not really your jam, we also make sure we put full episode transcripts on our Little Sparklers website for you to also enjoy, and fully captioned YouTube videos as well on our Little Sparklers channel. So thanks again for listening today. We really enjoy bringing this podcast to you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.